Well, at the end of Genesis chapter 42, where we left off, we saw Jacob, Joseph's father, broken, discouraged, frustrated, depressed, afraid. He wants his world to stop. He's had enough. He can't take anymore. He's overwhelmed with all that life has handed him. His son Simeon is in an Egyptian prison, waiting and hoping that his father will do what's needed to have him released. But Jacob can't do it. He can't face the possibility of losing his son Benjamin. He's been clinging to Benjamin for the past 20-odd years as the last remnant of Rachel and Joseph. He feels cheated by life. He was first cheated out of his wife Rachel by his uncle Laban. We didn't talk about this story, but you may recall on his wedding night, Laban, his father-in-law, tricked him, slipped Leah in to the bridal tent instead of Rachel. So Jacob was forced to serve that man for 7 additional years after having already served him 7 years to have her. He had her tragically taken from him during the birth of their second son, Benjamin. Joseph, his firstborn from Rachel, was the apple of his eye. Jacob loved Joseph so much. He loved him to the exclusion of all of his other sons. His world revolved around Joseph, and then the unthinkable happened. While Joseph was out in the fields looking for his brothers one day, he was killed by a wild beast, or so Jacob thinks. The grief and sense of loss was unbearable for Jacob. In a misguided attempt to replace the loss of Rachel and Joseph, Jacob has clung to his only other son of Rachel's, Benjamin. He can't lose Benjamin. He never lets Benjamin out of his sight. He never lets Benjamin go out into the fields with the other sons. Benjamin is forced to stay at home, where Jacob can always watch over him and protect him. He has to keep him safe. In Benjamin, Rachel and Joseph continue to live for Jacob. That's where Jacob's at. We can find ourselves in a similar place, a place where we have been hurt so much, suffered so much loss, experienced so many setbacks, become so discouraged and broken and afraid that we refuse to take another step forward. Now, we may not consciously know that's what we're feeling, but our actions reveal it, what's in our heart. We try to avoid any further pain. We turn aside. We won't risk. We quit trying, we quit living, and this is where Jacob is. And sometimes, in order to get us moving again, the Lord will nudge us and apply pressure to us through life circumstances. The Lord's applying pressure to Jacob, forcing him into a place where he's going to have to let his grip on Benjamin go and learn to trust the Lord again with his life. This is the beginning of a very important step in Jacob's own recovery and redemption. Genesis 43:1 says, "Now the famine was severe in the land, and when they had eaten the grain that they had brought from Egypt, their father said to them, 'Go again, buy us a little food.'" So Jacob and his family, they've eaten all of the grain that his sons had purchased from Egypt. Because the famine has continued, they're faced with having to go back to Egypt again to get more food. Jacob has tried to avoid this moment. He's put it off as long as he can. But the food reserves, they've been depleted. It's gone. They've got to go back. He's forced to ask his sons to return to Egypt now. Verse 3, "But Judah," his son Judah, "said to him, 'The man solemnly warned us, saying, You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you.'" Talking about Benjamin. "If you will send our brother with us, we will go down and buy you food. But if you will not send him, we will not go down. For the man said to us, 'You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you.'" So Judah basically tells his father that a trip to Egypt cannot even be considered unless Benjamin goes with them. Verse 6. Israel, or Jacob, remember, that's his other name. He's called Israel here oftentimes. Israel said, Why did you treat me so badly as to tell the man that you had another brother? So here comes the blame. See? Jacob feels this whole terrible mess is their fault for ever mentioning to this Egyptian official that they had a younger brother back home. Notice how Jacob says this, why did you treat me so badly? He sees this whole thing as a personal affront to himself. They replied, the man questioned us carefully about ourselves and our kindred, saying, is your father still alive? Do you have another brother? What we told him was an answer to these questions. Could we in any way know that he would say, bring your brother down? They'd done nothing wrong. They're just answering the man's questions as he interrogated them. There's no way for them to have known what this man would do with any of the information that they're giving him. If we remember that it was Joseph who was asking the questions, someone who already knew they had a younger brother, then we can see, too, how it would have been nearly impossible for them to not let him know they had a younger brother, because he knew the right questions to ask to get that out of them. And he was getting that out of them. He wanted to know about Benjamin. Verse 8, it says, and Judah said to Israel, his father, send the boy with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and you and also our little ones. I will be a pledge of his safety. From my hand you shall require him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever. If we had not delayed, we would now have returned twice. So Judah, he steps up and he promises with his own life to take personal responsibility for Benjamin's safety. Judah reminds Jacob that they can't afford to wait any longer. He needs to decide right now what he's going to do. The fate of all of them is critical. They're out of food. They put it off for as long as they possibly can. We will starve to death if we don't do something now, Dad. So verse 11, then their father Israel, or Jacob, said to them, if it must be so, then do this. Take some of the choice fruits of the land in your bags and carry a present down to the man, a little balm, a little honey, gum, myrrh, pistachio nuts, and almonds. Take double the money with you. Carry back with you the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was an oversight. Take also your brother and rise. Go again to the man. May God Almighty grant you mercy before the man, and may he send back your other brother and Benjamin. And as for me, if I am bereaved of my children, I am bereaved. Drama queen Jacob. As for me, if I am bereaved of my children, I am bereaved. Not exactly what we would consider a display of faith. But he's resigning himself to the situation. And he prays that God Almighty will grant them mercy before the man. Jacob is having to lose in order to save. He's having to lose in order to save. He's having to give up Benjamin in order to save all of them, including Benjamin. I'm sure in his mind he knew this was the right thing to do, but his heart is having a tremendous struggle with it. Have you ever found yourself in the same similar type of position where you have to lose something very dear to you in order to save it, and even perhaps yourself? That's the place that Jacob is in. So the men took this present, and they took double the money with them, and Benjamin, they arose and went down to Egypt and stood before Joseph. When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, so the scene, they're in Egypt now. They've come before Joseph again, the brothers. And when Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the steward of his house, bring the men into the house and slaughter an animal and make ready, for the men are to dine with me at noon. So apparently what's taking place is Joseph is informed that they've arrived. He hasn't really appeared before them yet. He just tells his guy, all right, take him to my house and I'll meet him there. We're going to have a meal together today at noon. So he hasn't really, you know, had any discussion with the boys yet, with his brothers. The man did as Joseph had told him and brought them into Joseph's house. And the men were afraid because they were brought to Joseph's house, and they said, "It is because of the money which was replaced in our sacks the first time that we are brought in, so that he may assault us and fall upon us to make us servants and seize our donkeys." Yeah, that's what he's after. He wants their donkeys. Let me assure you, the one thing Joseph does not need to do is to steal their shabby, bony, starving donkeys. He's rich enough that if he wanted to, he could buy every donkey in Canaan with his pocket change. But our fears can make us so irrational and stupid sometimes, can't they? He's going to steal my donkeys! No. Your donkeys aren't even worth butchering. It's obvious, though, that these brothers, they have a very guilty conscience, as we've noted before. They are paranoid. They see the black cloud in every blue sky. Instead of thinking they're getting special treatment from this powerful Egyptian ruler, they think it's a plot to have them killed and to steal their donkeys. Let's skip to verse 26. When Joseph came home, they brought into the house to him the present that they had with them and bowed down to him to the ground. And he inquired about their welfare and said, "Is your father well? The old man of whom you spoke, is he still alive?" They said, "Your servant, your father, is well. He is still alive." And they bowed their heads and prostrated themselves. And he lifted up his eyes and he saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said, "Is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke to me? God be gracious to you, my son." Then Joseph hurried out, for his compassion grew warm for his brother, and he sought a place to weep. And he entered his chamber and wept there. So when Joseph sees Benjamin, it's too much for him. So he quickly exits the room. He goes into his private chamber because he can't control his emotions, and he weeps there. First time he's seen his brother in all these years. And then verse 31, then he washed his face and came out, and controlling himself, he said, "Serve the food." They served him by himself and then by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat with the Hebrews, for that is an abomination to the Egyptians. And they sat before him, the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth, and the men looked at one another in amazement. So they're seated in the order of their age, and, you know, like everything else, that freaks them out too. Portions were taken to them from Joseph's table, but Benjamin's portion was five times as much as any of theirs, and they drank and were merry with him. The Egyptians looked at the Hebrews as an unclean people. This is why there are three separate tables here. The Egyptians are at one table. They will not eat with the Hebrews. They think they're disgusting people. Joseph, because of his high rank, has a table of his own. And then all of the brothers are all seated at a table of their own. And when the brothers notice that they've been seated at the table according to their ages, they start worrying. They're asking themselves, what's going on? How does this man know all of this about us? Things are starting to get really scary. God must have revealed all of our evil stuff to this man. He knows everything about us. And Joseph, he shows obvious favoritism toward Benjamin. This would have been another clue for them if they'd been paying attention to it, connecting the dots, that there's something else going on here. But again, as we've seen before, their guilty conscience only allows them to see the bad in all of this, and they only connect bad dots together. Well, it appears that things have gone pretty well because they had their meal, they drink, they get drunk together, they have a great conversation with one another. None of the terrible things that the brothers feared would come upon them has happened. They share this nice meal. They paid their money. They're given their grain. Simeon is released from prison and given back to them. Benjamin, he's still alive and he's also with them. And they're getting ready to be on their way back to their father Jacob. It looks like they've escaped a bullet. And they breathe this collective sigh of relief. Whew! All right, let's get back to Canaan as soon as we can. Little do they know, however, that Joseph is setting them up again with a test that's even more difficult than the one that they'd faced before. The brother's worst nightmare and worries is about to be realized. Genesis 44, verse 1. It says, then he commanded the steward of his house, fill the men's sacks with food, as much as they can carry, and put each man's money in the mouth of his sack, and put my cup, the silver cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest, with his money for the grain. And he did as Joseph told him. So he tells his assistant, give them all their stuff, and then sneak their money back in their sack again, just like we did last time. And this time, take my silver cup, my special silver cup, and put that in Benjamin's sack. These guys, they don't know that that's happened. As soon as the morning was light, the men were sent away with their donkeys. See? He didn't take their donkeys either. They had gone only a short distance from the city. Now Joseph said to his steward, up, follow after the men, and when you overtake them, say to them, why have you repaid evil for good? Is it not from this that my Lord drinks, and by this that he practices divination? You've done evil in doing this, referring to the silver cup. When he overtook them, he spoke to them these words, and they said to him, why does my Lord speak such words as these? Far be it from your servants to do such a thing. We haven't taken any silver or gold. Behold, the money that we found in the mouths of our sacks we brought back to you from the land of Canaan. How then could we steal silver or gold from your Lord's house? Whichever of your servants is found with it shall die, and we also will be my Lord's servants. He said, let it be as you say. He who is found with it, the silver cup, it shall be my servant, and the rest of you shall be innocent. Then each man quickly lowered his sack to the ground, and each man opened his sack, and he searched, beginning with the eldest and ending with the youngest, and the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Then they tore their clothes, and every man loaded his donkey, and they returned to the city. The absolute worst thing they could have ever imagined has happened. Benjamin is found with that silver cup. He will not return to Canaan. Verse 14, when Judah and his brothers came up to Joseph's house, he was still there, and they fell before him to the ground. Joseph said to them, what deed is this that you've done? Do you not know that a man like me can indeed practice divination? And Judah said, what shall we say to my Lord? What shall we speak? Or how can we clear ourselves? God has found out the guilt of your servants. Behold, we are my Lord's servants, both we and he also in whose hand the cup has been found. But, he said, far be it from me that I should do so. Only the man in whose hand the cup was found shall be my servant. But as for you, go in peace to your father. So Joseph tells him, oh, no, you don't all have to be my servants. Just the one that was found with the cup. Only this Benjamin will stay here. The rest of you are free to go. Well, Judah, at that point, he then recounts the whole story back to Joseph from their point of view about trying to get grain and their trip to Egypt and back and their father and all this stuff. And then finally, in verse 33, Judah says this. Therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the boy as a servant to my Lord, and let the boy go back with his brothers. So Judah says, keep me. I'll stay here. Please let Benjamin go back. For how can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? I fear to see the evil that would find my father. It will kill my father. If Benjamin doesn't go back, he will die. I want us to notice that this is a huge change from the cold-bloodedness of Judah back in Genesis 37 that we talked about on Friday night, where Judah is the one who came up with the idea of selling Joseph as a slave rather than killing him. Not out of compassion for Joseph, but in order to make a little money in the process of disposing him. He was a cold-blooded man. And now he's offering himself in place of Benjamin. There's also been a change in the other brothers too. See, they're given the perfect opportunity here to rid themselves of their father's new favorite son, Benjamin. It appears that he's been caught stealing. The Egyptian is willing to let all of them go free except for Benjamin. All they have to do to get rid of Benjamin now is to get on their donkeys and ride away. It's the perfect solution to the headache called Benjamin. They refuse to return home without their little brother, though. So they've changed, too. 45:1, then Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by him. He cried, "Make everyone go out from me." And he's talking to the Egyptian servants now. He says, "Clear the room. Only me and these Hebrew men I want here." So no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud so that the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard it. And Joseph said to his brothers, "I'm Joseph. Is my father still alive?" But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. So Joseph said to his brothers, come near to me, please. And they came near, and he said, "I'm your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me there, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth, and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me, you and your children and your children's children, and your flocks, your herds, and all that you have. There I will provide for you, for there are yet 5 years of famine to come, so that you and your household and all that you have do not come to poverty.'" I want us to notice how Joseph sees all of this that has taken place in his life as part of a greater plan of God. And he's good with it. There's no bitterness. There's no resentment here. He's good with what's happened. He's grateful for what's happened. His perspective is really quite amazing when you think about that. Well, verse 12, it says, "And now your eyes see, and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see, that it is my mouth that speaks to you. You must tell my father of all my honor in Egypt, and of all that you have seen. Hurry and bring my father down here." Then he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept. And Benjamin wept upon his neck, and he kissed all his brothers and wept upon them. After that, his brothers talked with him. So there's this beautiful reconciliation that Joseph has with his brothers. Joseph recognized this bigger picture of how God was at work, even in the midst of his misery and pain, to accomplish something larger and far-reaching. We need to take to heart the humble position that Joseph has before the Lord, too. There's no bitterness, there's no resentment. He's genuinely grateful for the opportunity to have been used by God to save many lives, even at the great personal cost that he's paid over the years. The unfolding of God's plan made it all worthwhile for him. Every circumstance in our life has the potential of being used by God for good in some way. And Joseph sets us an incredible example. He chooses to see beyond his own personal interests, and the result is that he gets to share in this grander plan of God. I want to close this first session. I have one more short one after this because we need to find out what happens to Jacob too, right? But I close with this by Robert Capon. He wrote this. God comes to us in the brokenness of our health, in the shipwreck of our family lives, in the loss of all possible peace of mind, even in the very thick of our sins. He saves us in our disasters, not from them. He emphatically does not promise to meet only the odd winner of the self-improvement lottery. He meets us all in our endless and inescapable losing.